We begin the current daf Masechet Ksubos, daf Yud Ches. We begin on the top line of the Yamed. The Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf, which is discussing the Mishnah that opened up the Perek. And that is, Rabbi Shua had said that the Mishnah quoted Rabbi Shua as being Moida, he agrees, as the Gemara had explained in the previous daf, although he argues in the previous Perek with Rabbi Gamliel, that he does not believe someone based on the time of a Migui. But as the Gemara explained, he differentiates between when it's what's called Shar Shachet and Ein Shar Shachet. Meaning if there's already some type of a suspicion here that something's going on, which is called Shar Shachet, you see something wrong. Then if someone has what's called a Koyach Ataina, a better claim they could have made but they didn't, which is called a Migui, believe me that I could have said something better but I didn't, that won't work. But Rabbi Shua does agree when we will believe a person, is like he says the case in our Mishnah, which is when someone walks over to somebody and says, look, I just want you to know, I know you don't know this, but this field actually was your father's. Really? Well, I didn't know. Yes, but I bought it from him. So that's a migui, which Rashi explains, which is hapesha asu hapesha iter, which means to say, my mouth got me in trouble. It can get me out of trouble. Yes, it was your father's, but I bought it. That's the case that Rabbi Shua agrees to Rabbi Gamliel, that we will say that claim of migui, that he's believed because of what he said, and therefore believe more what he's saying now. Now, on that, the Gemara continues asking, as it did on the previous daf, regarding the specific case that it describes Rabbi Yeshua as agreeing with, but Velisni, let it say, Maidir Rabbi Yeshua, that again, as we said, that Rabbi Yeshua is agreeing in the case of where it's Ein Shar Shachet Lefanecha, where we would not have known anything if he wouldn't have opened up his mouth, which is the Migui called Pesha Aser. He opened up his mouth, and now believe him now that he's saying that he purchased from his father. So the question the Gemara is asking now is, why did it have to be told about a case of when it's told about land, which is Karka? And as we explained in the previous daf, because they're talking about land, it has to be told about that it's when he said it was your father's, not you, which would have been a simpler case. It's yours, but I bought it from you. So as we said, because of the case of the Seifa, when there's witnesses that already verified that it was his or his father's, then the person that's going to claim that, yes, it was your father's or yours, but I bought it from you, then he's not going to be believed, as we said, because if it's the person himself, then either you made a cheskes gemal shalom, and then we would believe you, or if you didn't, then for sure we won't believe you. So that's what we said. It has to be talking about the case of the father where he did the chazakah 2 years when the father was alive, 1 year when the father was dead, which was in front of the child. That was the chiddush that we said, that we're not going to believe you based on your chazakah 3 years because it wasn't when the father was alive for the 3 years, and the fact that you continue with the child, he's a minor, and therefore that's not considered an admission because he doesn't know what's going on with his father's estate. So that is understandable if you're talking about a case of karka, where that the way you are believable if you have a chazak of 3 years. But the Gemara's question now is, say a simpler case. Say it's talking about metaltlin, movable property, which doesn't have to work with holding onto it for 3 years. That's only by karka. And then you could talk about the guy himself, as the Gemara says. Let it say that Rishu agrees. But when someone goes over to his friend and says, look, I know you might not remember, but mana levisim imcha, I actually borrowed money from you. Yeah, really? Yeah, but uparatavloch, but I paid it back to you. Shehu Neman, that we should say that biblically, which Rashi says that sounds like that rabbinically we might give him an oath, but at least biblically we should believe him that he doesn't have to take an oath that he paid back because of the principle of Pesha Asahu Pesha Hitter. Why talk about a case of Karka and therefore you have to go to the father? Just say someone walks over to his friend and says, I borrowed money from you but I paid you up, and the Rabbi Shua would agree because of Pesha Asahu Pesha Hitter. So I think Mar says, no, you can't say that case, Mishum, because if that would be the case, the Kabbalah Misna Sefer, then you would have to say the conscience of the Sefer, which that's what we say in Pesha Asa, is only if you have the Pesha Asa, that you created the problem, then you could undo it by being a Pesha Hitter. But as the Sefer says, as it says in the case that we do have in our Mishnah, where it says when he says it was your father's, but I bought it from him, but if there are witnesses that said it was his father's, then you're not being the one that's asering to be Matar and say that you bought it from him, and then we don't believe you. Now, if the case would be as we're proposing here, that someone walks over to his friend and says, look, I borrowed from you, but I paid you up, the contrast to the case of the safe would be, im yesh edim shuhu lavam imenu, if there are witnesses that said he borrowed from him, so you're not the Pesha Asar, the problem was started by other people, by the witnesses, v'u'ayim aparatav, and now it would be saying that he says, I paid him up, and we wouldn't believe him, but that, the Gemara says, you wouldn't be able to say that. Because v'akayim ulan, the halacha is, if someone lends his friend money with witnesses, in the tzorach lafor be'edim, he doesn't have to pay him back with witnesses, and that he is believed to say he paid him back without the witnesses' verification. So therefore, we didn't want to say this as a case, because we wanted to say this general conceptualization of Rabbi Yeshua's opinion, that he will agree in Pesha Aser, but it's only when you qualify for Pesha Aser. When you don't, like when there's witnesses that are doing the saying that you owe or that it's the person's field, then you won't be believed. That we wouldn't see in the case of when someone walks over to his friend and says, I borrowed from you, but I paid you, when in the safer would be if there are witnesses that said that he borrowed, that he wouldn't be believed that he paid him, because actually he would be believed to say that he paid him. Because that's a halacha in halva, in lending, where you don't have to pay back in front of witnesses. And therefore, so yes, there were witnesses that I borrowed, but I paid you back, and that's halacha. So therefore, that wouldn't qualify for the case we want from our Mishnah. But the Gemara continues asking, V'lisni, say a different case. Say as follows, Moed Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yeshua agrees, Ba'im al-Chaver, where someone tells his friend, Mana la'avicha b'yadi. Truth is, a mana of your father's is in my hand, meaning he lent me money. Now, but v'achalt of pras, I gave him to eat part of it. In other words, I paid him back some of that money. Shehu Neman, let Yeshua say even in that case that the borrower is believed without taking an oath. Now, the reason would be, is because of this concept that we're saying Yeshua agrees to when you have Ein Shar Shach Lefanav, meaning without anyone saying anything, no one would have known that he ever borrowed money from him. Now, the chiddush in this case that the Gemara is asking is, first of all, you wouldn't have to go on to a case of karka. But moreover, there would be a specific chiddush in saying this case, that you would be saying that even if he's in what's called the category of Moed B'Miktzis, generally there's a biblical halacha of Moed B'Miktzis Yechai B'Shvur, which is that if someone states a claim to you and you agree halfway, so then we say, oh, so then you have to make an oath on the other half too. And that, Rabbi Yeshua should have said a bigger chiddush, that even though this person is Moed B'Miktzis, he says, I borrowed $100 from your father, but I paid him back $50. Now, he should say that since no one's claiming anything to him, no one would have known. It's what's called Ein Shar Shach Lefanav. So based on the principle of Pesha also, you should say Ahu HaPesha Hitter, and therefore we should believe the guy, even if it's in the category of Maid B'Miktzis. Why don't you take it even further to really maximize the Chiddush and HaPesha also, Ahu HaPesha Hitter? So the Gemara answers, we can't. Because Alibi Deman, the way you're proposing, according to which Tanoic opinion, would this qualify? And that is, as Rashi explains, that this is a machlekes in Masechet Shavuos Daf Mem Beis Amud Aleph, where Tanoim argue regarding this principle of Moed B'Miktzis, regarding certain categories where it would apply or wouldn't apply. Now, if Rabbi Yeshua would be saying the way you're proposing, that it's talking about where no one stated a claim, but he's admitting he borrowed 100, but I paid him back 50, that then we should believe him and he shouldn't have to make an oath on the other 50. Now, if he holds like the opinion of the Rabbanan mentioned over there, Masechet Shavuos, but they say, even if the son comes with a claim, and then he agrees to part of it, that Meshav Avei Dehava, that is considered as if he's returning a lost object, where the Mishnah Masechet Shavuos explains the case that this Machlek is about. The case is as follows, where someone comes to a person, and he tells him, I know that my father lent you a mana. Now, the guy who is the defendant says, look, I don't have only 50 dinar. I don't know what you're talking about. He didn't lend me 100. He lent me 50. So that, the Chacham say, that he will be exempt. He will not have to make a shvua, what's called Maidim and Mixis. And the reason is, because he's what's called a Meishav Aveda. He's returning a lost object, which that's a Takana Drabbanan in general, when someone comes and finds a lost object. So he comes to return it. The guy says, what? You stole half my money. You're returning my lost object. You took half. So the Chacham was that you don't have to make a shavua. Because if you have to make a shavua, no one's going to ever return a lost object. Someone will just accuse him of taking half of what he's returning. So because no one would have known otherwise, you're coming on your own volition out of your altruistic intentions of returning a lost object that you found. We don't mandate a shavua. Now the Chacham say, essentially, this is the same thing. Now, the reason being, as the Gemara will later explain, is because he could have denied the whole claim. The fact that he's agreeing to have it is out of his true interest in doing sincerely what he feels is right. And obviously, he's not lying. Now, so therefore, the Chacham say that in such a case where the claimant is not claiming it, he's dead, it's his child that's claiming, where a person would totally deny the claim, and if he's not denying it, even though it's only half what the person's claiming, must be, it's like someone that's coming on his own, it's what's called Meshav Aveda, therefore he's exempt from a Shvu. Now, so then the question would be, if Rabbi Yeshua is going like the Chacham's opinion, then what would Rabbi Yeshua be teaching us? Which, as we explained, the intention of what Rabbi Yeshua is teaching us in our Mishnah, is this concept of Pesha Asa, when it's what's called Ein Shar Shachat, where we would not have known anything better. He's opening up this box of saying that I do owe money, but I paid it back. The problem is, even Shar Shachat Lafanov, even when someone's making a claim, there is a suspicion over here, he would still be believed. As we said, because it's just the child of the person, and therefore it's Meshav Aveda. So that wouldn't be able to be the crux of Rabbi Yeshua in our Mishnah, which is based on the principle of Ein Shar Shachat of Pesha Asa, because you're believed even if it's not Shar Shachat, meaning even if it's Shar Shachat, even if it's no Pesha Asa, where someone else is coming with the claim, you would still be believed. And Ialib Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and if Rabbi Yeshua holds like the other town over there, like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, then even if there is no claim of someone else, which is the case we're proposing for Rabbi Yeshua, Ha'amar Shvua Bayi, actually, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov would hold that you're not Neman, which we're trying to say would be the case of Rabbi Yeshua, even if no one knew any better. You just said that this is what I borrowed, but it's half of what it is, that you're still going to require Shvua. The time, like learn the Braisa, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, he says, Pa'am Sha'adim Nishbal Tainis Asma, sometimes, person has to actually take an oath based on his own claim, although it's only based on what he himself is doing, which is essentially what we're calling Ein Shar Shachat, still you actually have to make a Shvua. Ketzad, how is that case? Where someone tells his father, which this is the case we were proposing, we would say for Yeshua, which was showing that according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's opinion, you actually would not be believed, you actually would have to make a Shvua, which is the case of when someone tells a person, your father's money is in my hand, I mean, he lent me money. But I gave him back some of it. We once went out to eat. I paid for him. I gave him part of it. On that, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, Hareze Nishba, you do have to take an oath. You're not believed. This is essentially someone making an oath based on his own claim. No one claimed him. He started the ball by saying it was a mana, but I paid him back. So that's a Maidim Mektis. He has to make a Shavua. Chacham Aimrim, as we quoted them before, in Elikim Mishra Vedo Pater, no. It's like returning a lost object. I didn't have to open up my mouth. If I am, I must be saying the truth. And therefore, he's exempt from making a shvua. But one thing the Gemara clarifies is obviously this cannot have been the case that we're proposing for Yeshua, because then either way, if it's like the Chacham, then it's not even because of Ein Shar Shachat, of because Pesha Asa. Because even if someone is making the claim, you'd still be believed. And therefore, that wouldn't be the crux of what Yeshua is saying. And if you hold like a blessed ben Yaakov, then actually you would not be believed, even if it is your own tiny sasm, even if it's ancient shachar, it is peshas, it doesn't make a difference, you still have to take the oath, and therefore this is not a viable option to say for the case of Yeshua to illustrate his agreement of the concept of a peshas, hu ha-peshet. Once the Gemara introduced this machlaikis, the Gemara continues to elaborate this price of this machlaikis. So the Gemara asks, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, les le meshav avei de pater, doesn't he hold of this concept of someone that's returning a lost object that he found that he's exempt from an oath? But this is a takana drabanan, which is brought in Masechtas Gittin from Chesma Beis, where if someone finds a lost object, he doesn't have to make an oath, because as we explained before, it's called tikkun olam, because no one's going to ever return. Why? I should go ahead and return, and he might accuse me. I'm going to have to make an oath. People don't like making oaths. I'll have to spend money. Now, so the question is, since in the case that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov just illustrated, which again was the case we proposed saying for Yeshua, that no one is making any claim. He's just admitting on his own, no one knows, your father lent me a mana, but I paid him back. You're still mandating a Shvua, but there's no greater Meshav Aveda than this, where no one would have known anything. So why does Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov hold that you're Chayav a Shvua in that case? So Amar Rav, Rav answers, it's not as simple as the case sounds. It's not that no one said anything. It's actually talking about betoya noikot. A minor of that father who's not here anymore is stating a claim. This minor orphan is claiming that I know that my father lent you this money with, as the Rishayim explained, a definitive claim, a tainas bari. Now, however, this would still qualify for what Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is calling a tainas atzmai, that's the person's own claim, because essentially the taina of a cotton is not legitimate in halacha. So therefore, it's still considered tainas atzmai. But however, it's not totally meshaveda, because It's not Ein Sher Shachet. There is a claim. The children, the minor orphans are claiming that they know that this person borrowed the money. And therefore, since there is already a claim somewhat, so therefore there's a requirement of making a shvu on the other half. And the Gemara wonders, how could that be? But Rav Amar, and this is a Mishnah Mishnah, the shvu is, we do not have to swear, take an oath on the claim of a deaf-mute, a deranged person and a minor. So how can you say that the reason why Rabbi Elazar Yaakov holds that it's not Meshva Veda and you would have to make an oath because there is somewhat of a claim? Whose claim? A minor? You don't make an oath on the minor's claim. So again, why does Rabbi Elazar Yaakov hold that you have to make a Shavua? So the Gemara answers, no. My cotton, what did Rav mean when he says that the minor is making a claim? It means a gadol. He's an adult. An adult, you have to make an oath on an adult's claim. Now, meaning like in the classic Maida B'Miktzis, where he's claiming a mana, and then you're agreeing to only half. Now, v'amaykar l'katan, so why did Rav call a minor? Because the legabi mili de'aviv katan hu, because in regards to the financial matters of his father, he's considered a minor, meaning his father is the gadol, and he's considered the katan, but essentially he's a gadol. So yes, claim that's brought up in court by an adult, you would have to make a shvua, and that's what Rabbi Elazar Yaakov holds, that the person here would have to make the shvua. Now, why are we calling him a minor? Because in regards to his father's matters, he's like the minor in that way. But then the Gemara asks, so then the question is the other way around. Ihachi, tainas asmai, that's what Rabbi Elazar Yaakov is calling in the Braisa his own taina, and that he's being machadish, a novel thing. You never heard of such a thing. Person makes his own claim, he has to swear on his own claim. Tainas achem, that's other people's claims, because you're telling me that the minor, quote unquote, is not a minor, he's an adult. So why is he saying that sometimes he'll make an oath on his own claim? There's no own claim that's happening. It's actually the claim of someone else, of an adult child, of someone that he borrowed money from. So the Gemara answers, you're right. It's tainas achem. It's another person's claim. Voidas asme. When we said it's tainas asme, we meant to say it's his own admission that does him in. Someone's claiming a mana. Now, if he denies it, he would be exempt. But he's admitting to half of it. Oh, that's called Magda B'Miktus. Oh, now you have a shvu on the other half. That's what we mean, Tainas Atzmai. Now the Gemara asks, what do you mean? Kulu Tanasa. Every claim is Tainas Achem or Dais Atzmai Ninu. Is someone else claiming and the person's own admission. Now, and moreover, as Rashi explains elsewhere, that, what do you mean? So why would the Rabbana argue and hold that you're exempt because, quote, it's Tainas Atzmai? It's not Tainas Atzmai. It's Tainas Achem, Hoidos Atzmai. Well, every Maida B'Miktus is like that. It's your own admission that does you in, and yet the Torah says you're chayiv. So, A, why does Rabbi Elazar call that Tainas Atzmai? And moreover, why would the Rabbanan say that you're exempt? So, rather, the Gemara goes back and says, the truthfully that we're talking about that it's not an adult, that we're calling him a minor. It's actually talking about a claim of a minor. Now, the question that we asked, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, was that, but you don't make an oath on the tain of a cotton. So why would Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov say that you're chayiv in the shvua? That actually is only when the claim of the minor is saying that I gave you money. Now, when the claim of a minor is coming to the person saying, I give you money, we don't have to make an oath on the minor's claim. Now, the reason is because the pasuk tells us by the parsha of the Shomer, when someone gives a deposit to someone to safeguard, which that's where the halachas of Maida B'Miktus are learned out of, it says in the pasuk, Ki yidin ish el ri'ehu, and a man will give to his friend to watch, and then it goes on and says, and he comes and he claims and he has to swear, and so on. Now, ish connotes an adult, not a minor. And that's where the Gemara in Shavuos learns that we're not going to make a taina, a shvua, on the taina of a minor, because it has to be ish, not a minor. But hacha, over here, the case is talking about where he's coming with the claim of his father, meaning we have yitain ish. His father gave the deposit. His father lent the money. That, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov would hold, that you're going to make an oath based on the claim of the minor, because the reason why we don't make a shvu on the tain of a cotton is only because he's claiming that he lent him the money. That doesn't have yitin ish. But here he's claiming that his father gave him the money. We have yitin ish. For that yitin ish, you have the qualification, therefore you would have to make the shvu of Maida B'Miktus, which, again, that's still considered tainas atzmai, because essentially the minor is coming with the claim, and the minor's claim is not significant, but it is significant because it still has the qualification of Yitin Ish to have to make a shvua of Maida B'Miktus. Now, the Rabbanon actually argue, even if the tain is coming from an adult, not just a minor orphan. Now, and that's why they call it a Meshav Aveda. So what is this machlekes about? Why does Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov hold that we will believe and will have to make a shvua even on the claim of a minor of the father, whereas the Rabban would hold that even if the child is an adult, we won't have to make a shvua on what he's claiming. So the Gemara says, they're arguing in the concept of Rabba. Dama Rabba, the Rabba said, Mipnema Amrit Taira, why did the Taira say, that if someone admits to part of a claim, he'll have to make an oath? In other words, if he denies it, he's exempt. If he admits it, of course he pays. Why is it that when someone claims, you borrowed $100 from me, and he says, no, it's not true, 50 I did, that then he has to make an oath on the other 50 that he didn't borrow, and if he doesn't, he'll have to pay up. So the reason is as follows. Because chazaka, there's a presumption, ein odem meiz panav befnei bal chayvah. A person does not have the audacity to go ahead and have and deny the claim of his creditor. Where someone lent him money, and it was gracious enough to do that, and then he says, I don't borrow any money. A person doesn't have such azus. Now, v'hai b'kula bay delichvri. Truthfully is that this person really would like to deny the whole claim. Now, v'hai deloy kafalei. The reason why he's not denying it, as we said, because mishum de'ein odem meiz panav, because a person does not have the audacity to go ahead and just say, I didn't borrow any money from you. You borrowed money. How can you see such a thing? Now, we get your Ahmed base. Now, but truthfully, actually, there's a dialectic here on the other side too. Ubakula boy delightly. Actually, truthfully, he really wants to admit to all of it. Now, the reason why he's not admitting to all of it is kihecha delishtametle, is just that he could avoid him. The seven, he thinks, adahavali zuzi paranale, that until I have money, that I'll pay him back. Now, which traces quotes from Rashi himself, the Bava Metzia, that what the Gemara is coming to explain over here is where the question would be, is what would be the gain of having this person make an oath? And you should say, what's called Migidu Chashad HaMamayna, if he's suspected regarding denying money, he's a liar regarding money, so we should think he's a liar regarding making an oath. What's the point of making him make an oath? He's such a liar, he's denying the money, and he's saying, what money? Borrow from you? I never met you. And so what's the point of saying, oh, he'll just lie on that? So that is what the Gemara is explaining, that truthfully, he actually wants to admit the whole money. He really wants to pay up. And he's not chashad hamamayna. It's just he doesn't have money. So he just wants to get out of a situation where he's going to have to sell off all his assets. It's very uncomfortable. So he just wants to buy himself time. Now, that is what the Gemara says. Rahman Amr, the Torah says, no, don't let him get away with it. Who knows, then once he'll get used to that, he might not ever pay it up. Rather, Rami Shmuel impose an oath on him, so that he should admit to the whole thing. I mean, he's admitting part of it because he really wants to admit the whole thing. He just doesn't have the money. Now, he would deny the whole thing to buy himself time, but people don't have the audacity to deny the whole thing. So he admits part of it on that. So go ahead. That's already, we think already that he's just doing it to buy himself time, but we don't want to let it get away with that because then he just might end up denying it. So then we mandate an oath on the rest. That's Rabba's principle. Now, on that, the Gemara says is what their machlokes is. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Saba, he holds the loishno boy, but loishno bibenoi. Doesn't make a difference, this debtor, whether it's to the creditor himself or to his son, even if the son is a minor, ain't amazed. A person does not have the audacity. Now, Rashi clarifies one point. That's why we're still calling it tainus atzmai. Although it's coming with a claim of a child, because the claim of a minor doesn't have any halachic significance. But what we do say is that he really wants to deny the whole thing. Now, usually you say that if there's no necessity of not denying, you could deny, but you're not denying. So even if it's half what the person's claiming, obviously I'm telling the truth. That's what's called Meshav Aveda. But here you don't have that principle. Because here he doesn't have the audacity to deny even with the child he doesn't have. The Helkach Lav Meshav Veda. That's why it doesn't fit into the category of someone that's returning a lost object, rather like someone that's a Moed B'miktis, and he would be Chai of a Shu, as Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov recorded. Because you don't have, again, it's still considered Tainus Asman because the claim is nothing, but still a creditor's son, I can't say I didn't borrow. I just don't have the audacity to do that. And therefore, if you're doing halfway, that's considered Moed B'miktis. But Rabban and Sabri, they hold that no. Boyhuda in the maze. The creditor himself, the guy who lent you the money, him you can't go ahead and have the azus to deny the claim totally. And therefore, if you admit to half of it, oh, that's a Moed B'miktis. But for the son, he would feel totally comfortable. Even an adult child, yeah, he didn't lend him the money, he didn't take the cold cash from him. So, your father, I don't know what you're talking about. It's from the fact that he didn't have the audacity and totally denied the whole thing. So that must be out of the truthfulness of his own conscience. If he's admitting to have, must be he fits into the category of someone that's returning a lost object, and therefore he's going to be exempt from a shvur because he didn't have to admit. In other words, there was nothing impelling him to admit, and therefore if he is admitting, he must be telling the truth, and that fits into the category of Meshaveh, the way that the Kana is, that he doesn't have to make a shvur. But one thing is, as we explained before, that this is obviously cannot be the case that we wanted to propose for Rabbi Yeshua in our Mishnah, to say that this is the case that he agrees, HaPesha Asa or HaPesha Heter, because either way, it wouldn't make sense. If it would be like Rabbanan, so then you wouldn't even have to say it in a case of HaPesha Asa in Ein Shar Shachet, because it would even be if the minor is coming with a claim, that you don't have to make a Shvur and Yineman, as you just explained, because it's Meshav Veda. Whereas according to Blas Ben Yaakov, actually, you would not be believed, even if no one is coming with a claim, which would be called Tainus Atzmai, which even when the minor is coming with a claim, it's not a claim. And the reason why you wouldn't be believed is because you don't have the azus to totally deny it, and therefore you actually would be considered a moedim mikzus. Now we continue with the next Mishnah, again continuing the theme of the previous Mishnah, which we left over with Rabbi Yeshua's idea of what's called pesha asa hu pesha heter, where if someone is, we're believing him that there is a liability, then we can believe him to say that that was actually paid up. So continuing on that theme, the Mishnah says, ha'edim sha'amu, witnesses that said, Ksav Yedeinu Hu Zeh. This is our handwriting, where they're testifying regarding their signature, which is what's called Fekim Shtaris, to validate the document. Where if there's a, let's say there's a loan document where someone's coming, the lender's coming saying, you know, you owe me money and here's the document to prove it. And the borrower denies this. And he says, what is this? I borrowed money from you? You must have just made this up. You probably just forged signatures. So then it's what's required in halacha called kim shtaris, where you have to go ahead and have verification of that these signatures are true and valid. And if you have valid signatures, so then the borrower can't just claim that it was made up, and then they could go ahead and collect his money. Now, one of the ways of doing that is you get those same witnesses that signed, they come into court and they say, yes, this is our handwriting, this is our signature, therefore it's valid. And if it's valid that they signed, so you have two witnesses that are saying testimony in the document that this actually happened and that he does owe him the money that's claimed in the document that he borrowed. Now, so if they said that this is our handwriting, thereby verifying and validating this document, and you can go ahead and collect with that. Avo, but they qualify this by saying, anus mayinu, yes, we signed, but we were coerced to do this. Or ketan mayinu, we were minors. Or psuli edusayinu, we were actually invalid witnesses. In other words, either because we're relatives or because we were gamblers, we're their psuli edus. So then, hare elu neman, they're actually believed to invalidate the document. Now the reason is because since the only way we know that this is their signatures is only based on what they're saying. They're saying this is our signatures. That's what's validating the document in the first place. So that's the halacha that we said, what's called hapesha asar, hu hapesha hiter. In other words, it's not actually isser and mutter, but just like you believe the witnesses to say that this is their signature, thus qualifying it in the to make it a kasher ishtar, so then you should also believe them regarding what they're saying, but we were forced, but we were puzzled, but, which is saying but that it actually is not kosher. And we really didn't verify this happened. We just were forced to go ahead and write it, and therefore they actually could invalidate it based on the fact that the only way that it's kosher is because they're verifying it, but then their verification gets invalidated based on their saying that, but we were puzzled. Now, the Mishnah continues similar to the Seifa of the previous Mishnah, but v'im yesh edim shug sav yadim, but if there are other witnesses that this is their handwriting, in other words, their kim shtaris can happen in a few different ways. One of them being that we just get two other witnesses that say, oh, we know this is Reuven and Shimon's handwriting. Yes, for sure. Therefore, these are good signatures. And then you could collect. So we know it even without them. Or if their handwriting was verified through a different channel. In other words, they had signed on a different document, which was verified in Bezdin, and it's attached to it what's called a henpik, which is some type of a document verifying that these are valid signatures. And thus we can use it to compare to other signatures if it looks just like these people's signatures, and they're similar, then we know that these are their signatures and they're valid, even without them saying anything. So hence, there's no pesha asa. We don't rely on the document because of what they're saying. We rely on it because other witnesses said, or because we know their signature already from other documents. and therefore ein nemanim, they're not going to be believed to say that we were psulim, because they cannot invalidate a document based on what they're saying, because you don't have the pesha asur or pesha heter. The only reason why they're believed is because the way we're verifying is through them, so then they could unverify it, so to speak, by saying, but we were pasul. Here, since we know it's kosher from some other place, so this is kosher, they cannot come ahead and now invalidate it. Now, on that, the Gemara qualifies the halacha of our Mishnah. Amar Rama Bacham, he says, Loi Shanu, we did not learn the halacha of the Seifa, that if their signatures are verified from different documentation, but not through their own testimony, then they're not believed. That's Elisha Amra Nusim Ayinu Machmas Mam. That's only if they said, for example, the first case that the Mishnah opened up with, when they want to make it possible, this document, by, yes, although we signed, but we were coerced, that's only if they say we were coerced because of financial reasons. Now, which means to say, because financially we did things that were inappropriate, meaning to say we needed the money, someone was bribing us to forge a document, so we signed on it. Now, that Rabbi Bacham is saying is what the Mishnah is saying, then they're not believed. And the reason is because a person is not believed to say that he was a Rasha, which is essentially what they're doing. They're incriminating themselves by saying that we lied because of the bribes of the money that we wanted. Now, a person cannot testify regarding himself that he's a Rasha. Thus, what would be invalidating this document? Only by them saying about themselves that they were Rashaim. Now, the reason for this is what's called in halacha, adam karv etz la'atzmai. A person is, you know, just like you're not believed regarding a relative to say testimony, there's no greater relative to a person than he himself. And therefore, he's not believed regarding himself, not for something of a merit, not for something of a demerit, not regarding capital punishment, not regarding invalidating testimony. To make himself a wicked person and invalidating based on himself, a person is not believed. Now, these people are invalidating themselves when they say we actually signed falsely because of we were coerced for monetary reasons. That's rishus. You're not allowed to do that. And therefore, that's why the Mishnah says you're not believed. Now, but the Reisha of the Mishnah that said that they are believed, that's because you're right. We're not believed, but ha-pesha aso pesha hit. In other words, if you're believing us, like you obviously do believe us, because you're validating the document based on our own testimony, because there's no other witnesses, there's no other documentation, so then you should believe us that we were wicked people, but you believe us because of the migui that must be, we're telling that must be what we're saying is true. And even if it's not, then don't believe any part of it. Either take the whole thing or nothing. And therefore, the Rishon says, then they'll be believed. But if it's coming through some other place, then people are not just believed to say they're Rishon. We don't believe people when they say those things. Now, so therefore, the Sefer was only told about when they were saying, Anusim hayinu machmas mamon. Aval anusim hayinu machmas nefashos. But if they said, we were coerced to sign the document because of, for our lives, that is, the owner of the document said, you either sign the document that this is true, or I'm going to kill you. And he was a very powerful person that he could follow through with his thread. Then Rambam Chama says the Mishnah would agree. Hari elo nemanim. That then even if let's say you have ksav yod and yitzim makam achar, we have other ways of verifying their signatures. So we don't really need them. There's no pesha aser. It doesn't make a difference. We would still believe them because they're saying yes, we sign, but it was for our life, and therefore they are believed to say, to qualify what they had signed, which they had truthfully signed, that to say it's not true, this never happened, the borrower does not have to pay the money. If someone had a gun to our heads saying if we don't sign, it's going to be our lives, and that's why we signed. For that, they're believed to say that there was a case of oinus, thus invalidating the document. Now, that only Rava asks on Rambam Chama, Kol Kimine, is there such a thing that we would believe the Edim, even if they're claiming that it was because of for their life that they had to sign? But you're right, even if maybe a person would be allowed to sign because of his life, he doesn't have to give up his life. He could sign even falsely so that he could spare his life. But halachically, for monetary law, we still cannot believe them to vindicate the loiva, the borrower, to say he doesn't have to borrow. And the reason is because Kivin Shehigid, once they already said their piece, their testimonial, which is documented in the shtar by their signature, Shuv ein chayzer magid, they cannot then go ahead and retell their story once again. And that's because by testimony, it says in the Torah, a singular term of Haggadah. But the Torah says, if someone knows testimonial and he doesn't come ahead, it says, im lo yagid, if he doesn't say, then benas avayinu, now it says it in the Lashon Yachid. which that connotes that you only have one time to say your piece. You cannot be chayzer mag and come back at a later time and say, oh, I wanted to add one more thing. No, you can't continue, have an ongoing conversation. It's a one-time haggadah. Now here also, since they signed in the document, that's their haggadah. Now the question is, how could we believe them now at a later point in time to uproot what they said? And the reason being is because since we're not verifying the document based on them, so their piece is done. What they're saying is already has been said. And we have witnesses from someone else verifying that this is their testimony, that it is their signature. So how could they come ahead now and be chayzer magid? Now as Rashi explains, the case of the Resham is talking about when their signatures are not verified anywhere else. Now, we have to rely on them to do what's called the key mishtaris, to verify the truthfulness of the document. Now, for that, that's one testimonial. In other words, within the what's called teich kdei dibur, which is the amount of time to ask someone how they're doing, of their key mishtaris, of when they say that, yes, that we need their testimonial. We need that to verify their own signatures. If within that amount of time that it takes to say Shalom Alech Rebbe, they say we were forced. So there, that is its own Haggadah that's necessary. So that they could go ahead and then invalidate that Haggadah, because it's one Haggadah, it's within one sentence, one breath, so to speak, to say, but yes, although we're verifying, but you should know that we were a nusim. Okay, fine, we believe you on that. But here, we're not relying on what they say. Here, their signature was verified somewhere else. So their piece was said. Now, how could they come 10 days later, whatever it is, amount of time later, and say, oh, but we just want to qualify. You can't qualify anymore. You can only qualify if it's within the Haggadah, if you're coming for the first time, which is the case in Kim Shtaris, to verify. They're saying, that's one Haggadah, so then you're believed. But at a later time, how could you be believed? Now, Rava says, now, if you're going to say that this halacha of kivin shehigat shuv eino chayzer magid is only when someone says an oral testimonial when it comes to Bezin, and then after, like, this teich kdei dibur, he comes back a few hours later and says, well, I wanted to change something, then we don't believe him, because that's haggadah, that's actual verbalization of b'shtar loy. But maybe he'll say that, no, it says haggadah in the Torah. That's speaking. But in the document, that's not speaking. That I actually maybe could qualify and come back at a later time and be chayzer magid. And that the Gemara says no, because of Amr Shlokesh, we see clearly from Shlokesh Halacha that he says, Edem hachasum ala shtar, witnesses that are signed on the document, nasa kemisha nechkere dusim bebezin. It's as if that these witnesses were verified and cross-examined in a court. In other words, we don't question the validity of the documentation by having their signature on it. And therefore we see it is essentially in halacha the same thing as haggadah. And therefore the question then becomes in Rambam Bachamam is how could he say, even if we believe you that what you're saying is an usma yisam achmas nefashas, you're allowed to go ahead and sign because it was a risk of your life, but regarding testimonial, we can't allow it to be said in court because kibin shehigat shuvein l'chayzer magid, and even written, we see, is considered the same as oral in the sense of not allowing to be reset. It has to be only chad agada. So the Gemara says, you're right. Elikiyat mar, rather, when we learned this halach of Ram Bachama, actually it was not on the Seifa, it was actually Areshet mar. It was on the first half of the Mishnah. In other words, when the Mishnah said, when their ksav yodman is not yoytzim makam acher, it's only, we only know that it's their signature from themselves, and that they then qualify, but we were anusim, or we were psulim, or all these cases. On that, the Mishnah said, hare elu neman, that they are believed. On that, Amram Bacham, and he qualified, and he says, lo yishanu, we did not learn that we believed them, based on the principle of apesha aser, who apesha hitter, meaning since they're the ones that are verifying, then they could, so to speak, unverify by saying, yes, although we're verifying that we signed, thus allowing the lender to collect money, but we know that it's not really true, because we were apostle. And there, Muhammad qualifies and says that it's only if they're saying that this that they were coerced was because it was to the risk of their life. Where by saying such, they're not incriminating themselves. Because yes, you're allowed to go ahead and sign if it's a risk of life. Now, since we're relying on them, and since it's within this teich kdei dibur, it's within the amount of time frame to be considered one long haggadah, so then the pesha also who are pesha hitter, they could go ahead and undo what they're saying. But if they're saying that we were, so to speak, compelled, we were forced to do it because of financial reasons, then ain't them on them. Then they would not be believed, even though it's them that we're relying on who's verifying it. And you would generally say, what do you mean? Pesha also, pesha ete. If you believe me, look, how do you know you could even collect in the first place? Because we're verifying it. But then believe us that we're saying it's not true because we lied. Now, we shouldn't have. We were bad people. There was financial reasons that compelled us, but we did. So believe us that he cannot collect with it and not believe. My time, what's the reason? Because Eino the Mason Asmei Rasha, a person cannot go ahead and make himself into a wicked person. He's not believed to remove himself. Actually, halachically, interestingly, you would think you believe regarding yourself, but there's a chazakah, there's a presumptive state that a person is a kasher. But moreover, is that you're a karev etzel asmei, you're a relative to yourself. And as we know in Hilchas Eidus, that a relative is possible to say Eidus. So therefore here also, a person is not believed to incriminate himself. Now, as the Rishonim explain, but however, they could collect with the document, because since they verified in their first half of the sentence by saying, Ksav Yudein Huzah, then we do what's called Palkinon Dibure. We actually divide their paragraph, their sentence in half. And the first half that they said is true, they're verifying it, and it is Mukuyim Deshtar, thus being allowed to collect. But the second half of saying, Aval Anus Mayin, Aval Basul Mayin, Aval Katam, all these different things, they're not believed because Ein Adam Mesim Asmei Rasha, again, regarding the first case, at least, Aval Anus Mayinu, they're not going to be believed, and thus, actually, we could collect based on their verification. Now, Tarabon, we learned the Braisa regarding this Resha of our Mishnah. There's a machlekes in the Braisa, actually, in this case, where the Edom say, Ksavidein Huzeh, they're verifying it, but they say, Aval Anus Mayinu. And that the Braisa brings that actually ain nemanim lefois le divrei meir. May hold, they're actually not believed to invalidate the document. As our Mishnah says, no, and they are believed. So the Gemara asks, Bishlam the Rabban, we understand the Rabban as we explain Kitamayu as their reason is, Shapesha also hua pesha hitir, as we explained, the basic principle of the person that created this element could go ahead and undo it. Now, as we just explained in Rami Bachama, since this that they're saying we were an anusim ayinu was because of machmas nefashos, so they're not incriminating themselves. If you're not incriminating yourself, so then you're believed to say that, look, these are our signatures, but we were forced. You're forced, okay, so it's only based on what you're saying. It's peshasa, so we believe you're peshata. You believe, and therefore you cannot collect with the document. Now, Rashi clarifies another element, although one of the cases of the Reisha was psuli edesayinu, we were invalid for testimony. That the reason is not like we explained it in the Mishnah, that it's talking about that we were gamblers, that they were actually puzzle. They don't incriminate themselves by saying we were invalid, because the case is Toma where they say that we were relatives or that we were slaves, which are just puzzle edes, not because of anything bad that a person is. It's just they don't qualify in the halacha of edes. But now we're free, so therefore there's nothing incriminating that they're doing by saying psuli edes hayinu. So since they're not incriminating themselves, so then you have the classic concept of Peshas or Peshet, we believe him. But Lilirameh or my time, what's the reason, why don't we believe them when there's nothing wrong that they're saying? They're saying, Anus Minu Machmas Nafashas. So if you're believing them, HaPeshas, that it's Ksav Yudenu, so you should believe them also, HaPeshet, that they were forced and therefore not to be able to collect with the document. So now the Gemara clarifies the question by explaining which elements we understand, Remeir, but which one we don't. And that is, Bishlem Epsuli Eidus, we understand regarding the case, there's a few cases that the Mishnah talks about. There's Anus Meinu, Ketan Meinu, and Psuli Eidusinu. So regarding the last two cases, when they say that we were invalid witnesses, halachically we didn't fit into the category of witnesses, or minor, as the Gemara will shortly explain. Now, since they're admitting that the document was written appropriately, that the loan or the purchase was true, it actually happened. But they're just saying a technicality in law. They're saying we weren't fit for testimonial because we were a slave, we were a minor. Now, so essentially, according to what they're saying, it's what's called a milvah peh. They're saying, look, the loan happened. You just can't collect based on the testimony of the documentation because our testimonial is not valid in halacha. Although we signed and it's true, but we were minors, we were slaves. Or let's say that regarding the case of a sale, where they're saying the sale happened, it just didn't get sold based on this document, that Remeir says they're not believed. And the reason being is because a person a lender or someone that's making a sale doesn't just throw out his money for nothing. In other words, if he's going through the trouble of creating a document and he's having witnesses sign on the document, so the lender himself will be very careful to check to make sure that the witnesses are kosher, umechtim, and then have them sign. So you're not believed to say, we have a chazaka connected what you're trying to say. You're trying to say that it's true, and thus we know that premise that definitely this sale happened, the loan happened. Everyone's agreeing to that, even these people themselves. You're just claiming that you were a puzzle, that you were a slave, or that you were a minor. You're a slave? Since when would anyone in his right mind, a lender, go through the trouble of making a document, getting witnesses, and when he's getting a witness, he's going to get a puzzle? We don't believe you. A chazak is saying that he's definitely got kosher witnesses. Similarly, katanim nami, kadib shemalak, show to katanim regarding a minor when they're claiming that they're a minor. Yes, it all happened, but I was a young boy, I was 9, I wasn't kosher. We don't believe you either. Because Damar Shlokesh Shlokesh says, as we continue to tell you with Testament Aleph, Chazaka, there's this presumption, which again is connected what they're claiming, that Eina Eidim Chis Min Al Ashtar, witnesses do not sign on a document. Meaning, witnesses that are, let's say, Gedolim, they won't sign on a document. Eilim Kein Nasav Gadol, unless everything else, all the other parties involved in the document, are adults, meaning the purchaser, the seller. Now, based on Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish's halacha, that witnesses will not sign unless even the other people involved are not adults. So for sure, regarding witnesses, we also say the chazaka that the purchaser will not have to verify his sale. He's not going to get a minor to go ahead and sign, because if even, let's say, witnesses are going to verify that everyone else is adult. So when a purchaser wants to have a sale of a document of sale to verify, he's going to make sure that this is not a minor, because that he knows it's not going to work. So we have a chazaka connected when he says psul mayinu or ketan mayinu. So, okay, that we understand regarding Rav Meir, why he would hold in emanim, because this is strong chazaka saying that it can't be what you're saying is right. Because if you're agreeing, and you're thus undoing yourself by your agreeing that there was a sale or agreeing that there was a loan, then it doesn't make sense. It can't be that you were a minor or you were a apostle, because no lender in his right mind or purchaser would then go ahead and go through the trouble of making a document and having a minor or apostle sign it. But the Gemara does have a question about Elan Nusim my time. What's the reason when they say we were Nusim Machmas Nefashis? Why don't you say HaPesh Asar Hu HaPesh Hitter? That doesn't make sense. There's no reason. There's no Chazaka connected that. It could happen where someone had a gun to their head and it was a risk to our life. And therefore, since they're not incriminating themselves, and we know that this, the concept of a pesha or pesha heter, the only way we know that this document is valid, that's being verified through their own testimony, so then we should believe them where they're saying it teich kedei dibur, and they're not incriminating themselves, to saying, but we run this hayin machmas nafashas, and there's no chazaka connected that. That's the Gemara's question regarding that, at least that first of the three cases in our Mishnah, that Rav Meir argues in the brace and says that they're not nemanim. Why are they not nemanim? And that's what the Gemara on the coming daf will explore. Why would Rav Meir hold that ain't nemanim?